Good afternoon. Hello and welcome to this very exciting stage that we have and the opportunity we have in front of you to listen to some fantastic UK small innovative cyber startups who are all fighting for a prize. Myself, I'm Alison Vincent. I'm the CTO at Cisco. My background has been a PhD in cryptography and then 25 years in software engineering and most recently the CTO for Cisco. We have a wonderful judging panel. I'll put my glasses on so I can introduce you to them. Hope they can wave. David Cass, the Vice President for Operational Services and IBM. We have Warwick Hill, the CEO in Residence for Microsoft Ventures. We have Daniel Freeman, the Chief Investment Officer at C5 Capital. And Jonathan Kerr, the Research Director for Gartner. So a round of applause for our judges before they get started. Now, the startups you'll hear from today, they've gone through quite a grueling process already. They've got down to a final 11. There's 11 of them out there in the startup innovation zone, so I do encourage you to go and see the others who didn't quite make it this far. But these four made it through to this pitch-off, where they are trying to battle for this title of the best in the UK for cyber innovation. We've got some very strict judging criteria, which I think it's important for me to share with you so you know how we're judging these people. We're judging them on innovation, the ability to address the cyber challenge, the size of the market opportunity and their realistic plan to target, their differentiation from the competition, if the company has the ability to scale, and then finally the quality of the pitch itself, so can actually express the fantastic idea that they have. Now, we are on quite a tough timing schedule. Each of the startups has a very small time of 3 minutes to express what they want to express, and there'll be a big countdown timer so you can all boo them when the 3 minutes is up. And then the esteemed panel have another 3 minutes to grill them, and then we're on to the next startup. So that's the idea. Hopefully you guys will also enjoy it, and maybe you can also take into account the amount of clapping that you do for each of the presentations. That could be one aspect that we take in for our deliberation. So let's get started so we have time to listen to these fantastic startups. And I would like to invite to the stage, and everyone give a big round of applause because they'd be quite nervous probably, Terry Pudwell, the director and co-founder of Asuria. Come up, Terry.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. When does the... here we go. Right, good. bit of background. It's well accepted by everyone, I think, that SMEs in this country are under a cyber attack, just like big enterprises are. But really, they're aware of it. They'd like to do something about it. There's a lot of good government help and that and publicity. But the problem is really is that very few have got budget, got technical know-how, got skills in cybersecurity to really be able to use the enterprise solutions that are out there and the services that are out there today, which big enterprises enjoy. So at Asuria, what we're doing is we're bringing world-class defense-grade cybersecurity managed services to mid-sized organizations who haven't had access to this before. It's with these companies, it's not really about pure technology. Us in the industry, we're obsessed with technology, but it's not about that. It's really, and we're talking about lawyers, accountants, lots of mid-sized firms, it's more about affordable and accessible managed security services that really help them build their cyber defenses quickly. And in services that recognize the needs of SMEs, that's different to big enterprises, and in ways that deliver results very quickly and at less than the cost of employing one cybersecurity employee. That's the key to this as well. Having said that, at Asuria, we develop technologies that are used by major enterprises around the world, major defense contractors, governments, the largest SOC that I've ever come across, JSOC in Japan, huge SOC operation built on our technology. So we do all of that, and our innovation is in our technology. I accept that. But what we're interested in now, what really excites me and our company, is bringing this to the SME market. We're going to be building regional security operations centers, working with local partners, bringing easily affordable, easy to use defense services to local companies. And also the follow-up activity is delivered by local companies as well. So the key is in the word local. To develop this and to allow this, we've developed a highly scalable, resilient, heavily automated SOC management platform. And this is up and running live. It's real now, it's working. What that allows us to do is to find work with local partners who have got the right skills to deliver locally to their own customers with support from us. What we're saying is really these are ambitious companies that want to go into cybersecurity. They've got customers who need help and they're not really being addressed at the moment. Deployment takes a few days, not a few months. Results come really, really quickly. We've proven this time and time again, even in big enterprises, and that's the key for the SMEs. So the community of regional SOCs will communicate with each other, share threat information, we'll support that. There'll be a feedback process into the software, we'll propagate new software out to all of the partners. But through this initiative and simply through using our knowledge-based technology, we're going to rapidly raise the number, the cyber security skills around this country and the defences that our customers are receiving. That's essentially the bit that's really exciting us. So thank you very much. I've got about 8 seconds. Didn't mean to finish early, but there you go. Thank you very much.
To ask your questions. We'll also be timed, so don't hang around.
Sure. Solution-wise, since it's a variety of infrastructures that small and mid-sized businesses are running, are you agentless? Are you hardware? How are you deploying on such a variety of infrastructure?
We're software only. No need to deploy any appliances, but we're agent and agentless. We can collect from anything. In our global market, we have customers all around the world using our technology. We've never found anything we can't collect logs from. Our biggest SOC, you know, in JSOC is 850 companies they're monitoring across Japan, government, enterprises. So we can deliver and deploy to meet anybody's needs, but it's software only. We don't have to install any appliances. It's not what we do.
How dependent are you on managed security services providers to take up your software and to give you any operational leverage?
Oh, we are dependent, and we're recruiting now. Although we have a SOC of our own, we're recruiting now. And I'm really pleased to say, actually, the first two partners were already on board. MIT Dynamic, ESP Group, are with us. We're building the SOCs with them now. One is in Chelmsford, one's in Manchester. And today we've had five or six companies come to us saying, we wouldn't mind doing this. Actually, could you help us? So we'll support them, and we'll help them build the SOC. But we are dependent on them because we're a tech company, and we need partners to deliver locally to their customers. And often, some of these people will already have a customer base that's saying, could you help us? We're delivering the platform for them. We're helping them with training, but it'll be their business. They're up and running.
You mentioned that you have a knowledge-based platform that equips SMEs with key cybersecurity skills.
Yes.
What are the key skills you see lacking in the SMEs, and are they aware of it?
The key skills, the knowledge-based technology, a lot of the work we do with UK government, for example, is around GPG 13 security guidelines and standards and all the different standards. That's all encapsulated in the technology. Sorry, it's probably a bad throat. It's encapsulated in the technology. The issue that we see is that once the SOC or once a managed service provider and the technology raises an alert of some kind and says, we've got a problem, it's that follow-up. How do you then discuss with the customer what they should do, whether they're going to do an investigation or change the way they do something? That instant response is quite important, which is why we're doing this with local partners, because they will have local, either our MSP partners will deliver those services, or they'll recruit partners themselves to deliver that and work. And they'll often know the customers already. That's the key to it.
Just a couple of questions from me. SMEs, why SMEs? If you're so good at what you do, why don't you go up the food chain? Seems to me that you've got high regional costs and you've got low margins.
That's a really good question. I have to disagree with all of it. We are very good at the enterprise level. But if you're a small UK tech company and you're not in one of the analysts' magic quadrants, mm-hmm. you know, you're up against it trying to sell into enterprises. Now, we have lots of enterprise customers, mm-hmm. but we can't scale or grow quickly enough in that. So we're bringing very low-cost services to the regional market. Yeah. Thank you for the question. It's a good one.
Thank you. Okay, 3 minutes isn't very long, is it, either for the questions or the presentation? But we're going to keep going. And let me now welcome, and I need another big, you know, encouraging roar of appreciation so they don't get scared, to pitch number two, which is Remco Postma, the VP of Sales for Device Authority. Welcome to the stage.
Good afternoon, everybody. And we're off again. So my name is Remco Posma, VP of Sales for Device Authority, and really I'd like to talk about some of the issues that we're addressing on how we're innovating in IoT. So really one of the challenges that lots of companies do is they try and extend their enterprise security into an IoT world, but the challenge with that is the scale difference is very, very significant. So I'd like to talk about four specific things that we're addressing in that. So if you think about a typical IoT deployment, you're looking at a device, a gateway, and then a cloud environment. So what you do on a device, typically how you authenticate a device is you put a PKI certificate on that. The challenge with that is you can spoof a PKI certificate, therefore it's not tied to the device. The challenge with that then clearly is what we have is we have some dynamic key capabilities, which is patented technology, which ties the certificate to the hardware DNA of the device, thus creating what we call a trust anchor. The second issue with the device is that you often put a static certificate on. The challenge with a static certificate is, if you take a car, for example, a certificate issued to a car could have a lifespan of 15 years. That's really good for a hacker, but not so great if you're the manufacturer. So what we can do with our dynamic key capability is we can cycle the keys as aggressively as you want. Now, clearly, there's practical limitations to that, but that really addresses that issue there. So then you look at the data going from the device to the gateway, and typically what people do is they use transport layer security. The challenge with transport layer security is that the data inside is not is in the clear, basically. So if you do get breached, your data is still at risk. So what we can do is we can selectively encrypt the data streams coming into the cloud platform and apply that cryptography to that. So that basically means that from the device all the way through to the cloud, we persist that encryption of that data. So in case of a breach, you still have that level of security around your data and your customers' data. And then finally, once you get to the platform side of things, or it could be a cloud or it could be multiple cloud environments, we still have the data encrypted at rest, so it's still secure there. And what we can then do is we can apply policy to who has access to that data. By having had the data encrypted using different keys, we can then really apply that very granular level control to how you then secure that data. So I think on the whole, that is how we innovate in IoT security. So really we're taking a slightly different approach than traditional people do at the moment. So we have a trust anchor around the device, very strong encryption that maintains that data integrity all the way from device through gateway through the cloud or multiple cloud environments, and that's how we deal it. In terms of going to market, we have partnerships with IoT platforms such as ThingWorks. We have a partnership with Symantec around their roots of trust engagement. And we're also looking at clearly signing up resellers and others in this space, as well as looking at the OEM route to market. So with that, I think we have a very innovative way from a great kind of British-founded and British-registered company. And with that, I'll hand it over to questions back to you. Thanks for your time.
Who manages the keys?
Who manages keys? Well, the keys are dynamically generated on the device. So the keys you can basically manage either by the service provider who's providing the service to the end user, or clearly the end user might choose to manage the keys themselves. Okay. So that is typically, and to be honest, depending on who you speak to, there are different approaches that people prefer to take.
So what mechanisms do you put in place to establish trust in whoever is doing that key management, whether it be end user or service provider?
Well, so clearly in the way, and that's partially the secret sauce in the patented technology, clearly around how we then do the device authentication and the enrollment process. There's a lot of technology in there in terms of around the entropy of how we use the various components on the hardware that we choose versus then how we enroll the software. So, but again, in terms of the service provider itself, clearly we make sure that they have the right credentials in place to be able to manage those kind of things themselves. And often what we do see with the partners that we are approaching, they are already providing PKI solutions to enterprise customers, so they're familiar with the enrollment process. It's just we provide it the same solution in a different way.
And I guess as an end user, do I control the key rotation, or who controls how the key rotation?
So whoever controls the policy, and I would always advocate that be the end user, they will clearly have control over how often and frequently you cycle the keys. And you can do that dependent on the value of the data stream, really. That's typically how people will do it.
It strikes me that a large part of this market growth will depend on your ability to convince large OEMs to adopt your technology. Why do you think you have the ability to do something that they can't do themselves?
Because I think it's a very specific capability, and I think also because we have some patented technology, and I think what's proven out already is that the technology that people use right now so PKI environments, is very difficult to scale large volume. So we've seen clients where they've tried to do PKI in the enterprise and then took that same person to then roll out PKI in a IoT environment, and that's really, really complex. So I think because the way we cycle keys and the way we manage it is far more easy to manage as a whole and integrate into your enterprise PKI, that's why I think we're better placed to do it, because it's an easier way and more cost-effective.
Just from a business viability point of view,
sure.
How are you going to compete against large cloud platforms such as AWS, Microsoft, Google, when we start launching our IoT platforms? Surely to me, you scream out to me that you're a licensing business. You're not a service provider.
And we are a software vendor, right? So we would see all the service providers, so the cloud providers, at the moment, we see them a lot as partners as well, because they have certain levels of technology within their platforms, and some greater than others. And I think what we're seeing in some of the platform providers, they offer a certain level of security around whether it's PKI encryption or not that includes it, but we typically elevate that still. There you go. Thank you.
Okay, that's a patent I'd like to look at, just from my own personal opinion. So moving on, we have our third. What do we think so far? Enjoying what we're hearing? Excellent. So we have our third company now for you, and I did have to ask how to pronounce the company name, and from asking you and getting up here, I've forgotten again. Anyway, let me welcome Adrian Barrett, founder and CEO of Exonar.
Thank you, Alison. So, I don't know what I've got. It's a question and a statement we hear very often. In other words, I don't know where my sensitive information is, who's got access to it, where it's stored within my network. And it seems really unreasonable as an industry to be asked to go and secure an organization's information when it's very difficult to discover, understand, and act on where that information is in the first place. You'd have to ask whether Sony, if they had have known that all of those spreadsheets had to contain passwords to their servers, would have really left them there. Or in fact, whether TalkTalk would have left all that unprotected customer information within their databases if they could have readily accessed it. And in fact, within our own work that we've done over a period of time, we see that those companies aren't alone. So we see for every 100 employees that we see within an organization, we find about 10 passwords in clear text within documents on the network. And we find that about 10% of total files have a significant amount of personally identifying information, which of course will be subject to the General Data Protection Regulation coming from the EU. So we set out to solve this problem. We decided that being able to go and provide powerful search for security was a really important tool for us all to be able to have. And we break this down into three parts of the process. So we solve it by looking at, firstly, discovery. Being able to ask questions of the information to readily identify where the stuff is we really care about on the network. So asking questions like, where are all the documents that contain my passwords? Where are all the documents that contain my customer's information or my customer lists? Where are the files that should be classified top secret but have been misclassified? And so we use some new technology to enable people to go and answer those questions at scale and do it very rapidly. Whereas with a search tool like Google, it's really optimized to being able to go and provide a short list of results where you pick the top one. Within an organizational context, you need to be able to understand the characteristic and landscape of all of your information and be able to go and act on it. So we use machine learning to enable people to go and use the characteristics of information to take action on it. So in the similar way that your spam email will automatically get put into a bin so you don't bother having to use it, we can automatically understand how a document should be classified based on its similarities with other documents that look similar. We've deployed this in a way so that it can go and work very rapidly, so it can get used within a post-breach analysis environment to understand what information has been accessed, or we can go and deploy it so it becomes an ongoing tool to enable organizations to understand and act on their sensitive data within their organization, and ultimately to make it more productive for the individuals who are sitting within there. Thank you very much. I'll take some questions.
So do you need to tune it for your environment? Or
do I need a what, sorry?
Is there tuning involved for it? You mentioned the machine learning. Does it
tuning,
have to learn
okay.
machine environment?
So in a similar way to the way spam detection works, you're really using the characteristics. So we're collecting all of the metadata and all the content of documents. And you can effectively categorize a bucket of information as being whatever you like. So it could be documents that, let's say, have top secret in the footer, and then it will use the language, use natural language processing to use the characteristics of the language within that document to figure out whether maybe it should be classified in the same way or not. So it requires relatively little tuning in terms of being able to go and get there. Certainly much less tuning than using a traditional tool set like data loss prevention or something.
Just two questions from me. What's your business model and resistance to your product from a large corporate who has sensitive documents? They don't want you scanning their documents.
So
how do you get around that?
So two questions from there. So firstly, the majority of our customers today are very large organizations, in fact, and that's because the problem's really large. Now, we won't go and eat that elephant in one sitting. We'll typically start with a targeted deployment and then grow out from that perspective. Mm-hmm. We really started from defense and aerospace as an industry, and so a lot of the lessons we learned around securing what we do has put us in really good stead as we've started to broaden into other markets from there. Mm-hmm. So we use a very open policy in terms of how we secure what we're doing, mm-hmm. And we're very open to people doing penetration tests on the software that we go and create as well. And our model at the moment is we effectively license the software by per terabyte per period of time that it's used. So it means it can get deployed very, very quickly. If there's a brief discovery project that needs doing, or over a longer period of time, then we can go and do it in that way as well.
So it's billed per terabyte, did you say?
Per terabyte per annum or per terabyte per month, correct.
Okay.
What is your plan for cloud deployment?
So we've recognized that cloud, even environments that were previously quite unfriendly to cloud, like government, is increasingly becoming the case. So Mike Stone, the CIO of the MOD, is very putting cloud at the center of the way they're going to manage their information in the future. And increasingly, we're seeing companies being cloud native in the way that they want to go and store their data. So we are all of the technologies that we use are naturally happy sitting within the cloud. So Hadoop at the back end, the way we go and run our search, Spark for machine learning, is all designed to work in that nice horizontally scalable environment. So over the next few months, we expect to be announcing a cloud deployable version where clients will get to keep the encryption keys themselves. So we can't get access to it. It's still in a privileged environment from their perspective. And that will also then enable us to scale towards smaller organizations as well.
Okay.
Yes or no question?
No.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're now down to the last but not least, the fourth. Let me now invite to the stage Chris Wallace, the co-founder and CEO of Intruder. Let's welcome Chris.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Chris, co-founder and CEO of Intruder, a new platform for small to medium enterprises to find and fix security weaknesses in their internet-facing systems. 15,000 security vulnerabilities were released last year alone. That's more than 40 per day. And on top of that, you have new practices like DevOps and agile development, which means the systems that our businesses rely upon are constantly shifting beneath our feet. Big enterprises know what to do about this. They buy continuous vulnerability scanning software and they hire teams of experts to configure it, operate it, and analyze the results. But what's everyone else supposed to do? So many smaller businesses can't afford to hire a security expert. And even if they could, there aren't enough of them around. In fact, it's predicted by 2020, there's going to be a 1.5 million shortfall in the number of cybersecurity experts needed worldwide. So what's everyone supposed to do? Who's going to fill that gap? We can't just give them the tools that the big enterprises have been using and expect them to work with it, because they won't know how to configure it, they won't have time to operate it, and they won't understand the results. So that's why we're creating Intruder. Intruder is simple to use, easy to understand, always on, and provides proactive notifications for critical vulnerabilities. Because SMEs don't need technical innovation, they need usability innovation. That's why at Intruder, We don't say Oracle TNS listener detected on port 1521. We say your database is exposed to the internet. That's why Intruder, we don't have pages and pages of advanced configuration options. You just tell us where your systems are on the internet, and we do the rest. And that's why we're announcing here today at InfoSec that we're about to become the first vulnerability management company in the world to have a mobile application, so that we can proactively notify our customers of critical vulnerabilities on their network, even if they haven't caught up with their emails for a few days. So my co-founder and I, David Robinson, we spent many years working as ethical hackers for one of the UK's leading ethical hacking agencies. Customers included global retail giants, big banks, and the UK government. And we were both qualified as check team leaders by GCHQ. It meant we could test up to secret level government systems. And now we want to bring our expertise to help thousands of businesses, smaller businesses who can't afford cybersecurity experts, to find and fix flaws in their internet-facing systems. Thanks very much for listening. Chris from Intruder, and I'd love to answer any questions if you have any. I'm sure you do.
What's your average false positive rate?
That's a good question. So we do manual verification of issues wherever we can. I think in terms of the rate, it depends what issues the customer has on their network. I can't give you an exact average, but we use humans in the loop to verify issues where we can.
Are you providing the remediation help to the organizations? Because as you mentioned, they may not have experienced security teams, so it's one thing to tell them they have an issue. It's a whole other thing to fix it.
Absolutely, yes. So we're only a year old. We're still quite a small company, but we do have a number of customers at the moment. And because of that current informal nature, we encourage our customers to pick up the phone and give us a call, and we can help them out with stuff. In the future, the way I see that evolving would be probably like the VeriCode model, where we have analysts who are at the end of a phone. People can, you know, pay a little bit more if they want to have a little bit more help with particular issues, and we can guide them through it. But absolutely, I think that's something that they're going to need.
Cyber criminals don't devote significantly lower technology to hacking SMEs, so the cost of defending them should remain relatively similar. Mm-hmm. SMEs, however, won't pay as much money to defend themselves. So how do you scale your business?
By getting lots and lots of customers. I think if we're the number one solution for the SME in this space and we dominate the market, then that will scale up. We can provide this solution to lots of businesses all at the same time. Does that answer your question?
No.
Well, I wonder, if you have to provide remedial work to all those companies, it's a lot of little businesses to fix.
Sure, yeah. So I guess that's just market economics, right? If they can't afford to pay for the extra advice, then they'll have to find it elsewhere. But it's something that will work itself out.
Yeah, that comes back to my question. There's a sort of a flaw in your scaling argument that you need lots of overhead to scale your business, and the revenue and the margin that you get from it don't add up.
Okay, well,
what's your price per seat per use? You know, what are you
price starts at $500 a month at the moment,
right.
But we've got one customer paying upwards of $1,500. So,
right.
Yeah, I think if you think about the alternative, they potentially would have to hire a security expert for $50,000-$60,000 a year. I think you can deliver a lot of services at scale to lots of customers if you're set up in the right way. And in particular, I think with the business that we have at the moment, which is just looking at internet-facing systems, there's something there that really does scale, because a lot of people's internet-facing systems are the same. So we can look at doing stuff like producing videos to help with common issues or explaining better. It's all about helping the customer. It doesn't always have to be a human if there's better ways of doing it.
Yeah, that's UX.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So I was actually surprised that none of you actually used up your full 3 minutes. I expected to have to grab you off the stage, but you kept time, which is fantastic. So I will ask the judging panel if they would stand up and begin to leave the stage, because we have a very short period of time to deliberate. So while they're doing that, you have some entertainment for you while we are deliberating. And he's going to kill me for saying this. But your entertainment is, I'd like you to welcome on the stage, Jonathan Luff from Cyber London. Please give him a warm welcome and treat him gently. See you soon.
Thank you very much indeed, Alison. I'm not exactly Beyonce.
So I'm here to use the time that's available while the judges deliberate to tell you about an initiative that we're launching here at InfoSec 2016 called Hut Zero. Before I do that, I'll just tell you a little bit about who I am, who we are, and then I'll get on to Hut Zero itself. So my name's Jonathan Luff. I'm a recovering diplomat. In fact, I've recovered to the extent that if you'd like me to, I will be extremely undiplomatic about Brexit at the end of the session, if you'd like me to, and if there's time. I was involved in a small capacity in the drafting of the UK's first cybersecurity strategy. Please don't hold that against me. And I left government in 2012 to work with technology companies to help them expand around the world. One of the things that we did was set up Cyber London. Cyber London is known as Cylon. You can see it up there on the screen. It is Europe's first only dedicated cybersecurity accelerator program. It has been running since the start of 2015. We've had 23 companies go through the program already. Full disclosure, one of the companies that was on the stage just now went through our first cohort, but I'm not going to give away which that company was, but obviously we're very proud of the progress they're making. So Cyber London works with fully established, fully formed teams working in the cybersecurity area. We have partnered to set up Hut Zero, a program which is designed to work with individuals at the earliest stage in their journey towards becoming cyber entrepreneurs and setting up cyber businesses. We have partnered with the Centre for Secure Information Technologies, CSIT, at Queen's University in Belfast. I suspect most people here know about CSIT. It's a fantastic team, fantastic organisation, one of the UK's top centres of excellence in cyber and information security. So the team at CSIT and the team at Cyber London, which includes myself, includes Alex Van Someren, includes Grace Cassidy, my co-founder, and Kirsten Connell, who we poached from Seedcamp. We, together with CSIT, are going to run Hut Zero. So what is Hut Zero? Well, as I was saying just now, whereas Cyber London really does work with companies that have already formed, even if that they're at a pretty early stage in their journey, we feel that there is nonetheless a need to support people at an even earlier stage. You might remember when Prime Minister David Cameron visited Washington at the start of 2015, he announced that the UK government was going to do more to support entrepreneurship in this area, and he announced what would be what he termed a pre-accelerator program, and he invited tenders to run that program. So we came up with the idea of Hut Zero. Hut Zero will work with individuals, not teams. It will work with people who have not yet formed cybersecurity companies, but who are curious about doing so. I think I'm going to patent the phrase "Cy-curious." The idea being that there is a huge amount of talent in the UK, some of it gathered here, but much of it in other industries, in other fields, or not yet in industry at all. So we will be looking to engage students, academics, people working in cybersecurity already, maybe for larger companies who themselves feel that they have an entrepreneurial journey they want to take. And we'll also be looking to engage people who are working in other fields but who have transferable skills. Hut Zero, unlike Cyber London, will be a very concentrated, condensed program. Cyber London runs for 3 months with ongoing mentoring after that. Hut Zero will run for 5 days in September of this year. The first program will be from September the 12th to September the 16th. It is free, thanks to the support of the Department for Culture, Media and Sport as part of the government's strategy for building the ecosystem in cybersecurity and for encouraging more people to set up businesses in this space. I'll repeat that, it's free. If people want to take part, there will be a week of intensive mentoring, one-to-one sessions, group sessions. We are shamelessly borrowing from people that we admire, people like Entrepreneur First, who engineer serendipity by putting people together who have similar interests but don't know one another. We will take the best 20 candidates that we can find from across the UK and we'll run a week of very intensive programs with them. We hope that they, by the end of that week, which will be followed by another 3 months of informal, ongoing support and mentoring, we hope that they might form some interesting connections, and we very much hope that by the end of the program, they will have made a decision whether to pursue their entrepreneurial journey and maybe set up a business of their own. The idea is that it's practical. We're not asking people to give up their day jobs. We are saying, if you're interested in this, if you think this is something that might interest you, come and find out, come and learn more. This is an area, as you will all know, that it is difficult to set up and run a business. I think you've just heard from four fantastic companies relatively early in their development. I'm sure they would all tell you that it's tough going. But that with the right support, with the right network, with the right approach and with the right team, you can do some pretty amazing things. I hope the mathematicians in the room will like our name. I hope that you will also like our nod, deliberate nod in the direction of Bletchley Park. Even the colour comes from the huts at Bletchley Park. As I say, we want this to be practical. We want people from all around the UK to feel that this is something that they can try out. We will cover all of the costs of accommodation and of travel to take part in the programme. And our fantastic hosts at Cyber London headquarters at Winton Capital in Hammersmith provide absolutely free office services. They also provide rather fantastic breakfast, lunch, dinner and coffee. Which is, I think what draws quite a few people to the Cyber London programme. Anyway, it is. You can see all the details up there on the screen behind me. How can you get involved? Well, frankly, I would be delighted if the people here, the people at InfoSec, heard about this initiative. They recommended it to people that they think might benefit from it. We're not there to steal away everyone's best people. I think it's inevitable that some good people decide at some point in their career that they want to try something new. I think that's a good thing. I think it can energize organizations. We do want to see more small businesses form. We will only take 20 participants on the first course. This is not a giant program. But if you know of people who you think would benefit from this, we'd love you to reach out to them. We'd love you to get in touch with us. Tell us what you think. We would love you to go away and think about this, to tweet about it, to like us on Facebook, to send us an email, get in touch, and do what you can to help us communicate the fact of the program, the details of the program, and hopefully we'll have a genuinely exciting time with the people who take part. It will also take place at the same time as the launch of the next Cyber London cohort in September. So there should be a fantastic interplay between individuals thinking about setting out on their on a journey and teams who have already made that decision, like the teams that you heard from this afternoon. And hopefully there'll be some fantastic connections made and we will further encourage the development of a truly vibrant cybersecurity economy in the UK. I'm really delighted to see so many people that we recognise through Cyber London here at InfoSec. It's absolutely fantastic. We hope that many of those go on to be exhibitors, main exhibitors on the floor of InfoSec over the next 3 to 5 years. Anyway, I will stop there. They did ask me to keep going for 15 minutes, so I'm very happy to take some questions. I could sing. I'm not sure that would help very much. Tell us about Brexit. So it's the easiest subject to fill up any remaining time. Well, look, I think Brexit would be a disaster for everyone gathered here. I think it would be a disaster for small businesses, and I think it would be a disaster for large businesses. I think the UK benefits enormously from its access to the European market. I think that access would be diminished if we left. I think regulations like the one mentioned by one of the presenters before will apply to any business in the UK, whether they like it or not. And I think that that same issue applies right across the board. So there you go. That's my view on Brexit. I'm happy to argue with anyone who thinks otherwise. I think it would be a disaster. Any other questions about Hut Zero, about Cyber London, about CSIT? Very happy to take any questions. If not, I will sit down and we'll get the judges back in. Thank you very much.
So how was the entertainment? Yeah, that's right. So we have, see, look, they're exhausted. They're coming back from the fight that we've had. We didn't have a fight. It was quite an even discussion. We thought all four, to come this far amongst all the competition, all four of them are obviously very strong to get this far, so we do thank you all for your involvement generally. But there has to be a winner. Life's not fair. I keep telling my son that. If we go back to the original criteria that we looked at, and that's certainly something that actually helped us come down to the winner. The winner, we feel, had a very innovative solution. They had thought through their go-to-market strategy very well. There was certainly a business model behind it, and it was very much in an expanding market of the IoT space. And so I would like to give a drum roll now, and welcome to the stage. The winner of the UK Small Business Cyber Innovation Competition is Device Authority. Oh, yes, picture with the judges.
Picture with the judges. come in.
Is this where you lie down?
So thank you ever so much for joining in today. I do encourage you to go and see the four companies, and also the other 4 minus 11 is 7. Go and see the other 7 at the innovation space. So thank you very much for your time today.